From Play With Knives 4, George and Claire, The Baby and the Bikies, a novel in prose and verse. Chapter 2, Verse and Suddenly the Guns. Crux, the Pointers and a Thousand Other Stars burned white as magnesium in the lingering last dusk, as if they had at last been fed by the impossible white sun, now set red dry, seeming a high cliff in a desert. The desert wind, a real calm sin, was low, as the flock of parrots, whimpering and whistling, surprising in its individual soars and plunges, but it grew no colder now. Claire and Ruth sat with George on the baked brick steps behind the back porch, talking about prisons. Three cats, saved by Claire and sent from Coz, sprawled on the grass. The black, skinny dog from Egypt slept too, twitching. Claire crouched on the actual arid, clay-smelling earth, her back pressed below George sharply. George sat on the second step, didn't know if stroking her head on his knee were too patronizing, too clumsy, instead held her head at the curve of the neck, under her hair's damp, stranded silver-white. Ruth was singing in dulcet contralto under her breath, some comforting Hank Williams song in Darug. Claire recognized the word for heart, joined in with her quiet treble, having learned as a child some Darug words from her stepsister Janice, who also she had murdered. On the steps they had discussed how hot it would have been today at Cobham, no matter how much air conditioning. The place was set out wide in very low blonde brick on the Warrington floodplain. It must have cooked for a week. The sense of the outside heat piercing through to the spines of the inmates, skewering them like lizards to building block-shaped lounges and their beds. Ruth stopped her song and asked, depressed, "Tomorrow at Cobham will you see my little boy?" Meaning the youngest great-grandchild. An instruction, not request. Claire allowed her neck bone to press against George's thumb and promised, "We will, he's a sweet kid." George knew that she wanted the pressure to cut off blood and thought, but the flesh was too slippery from sweat. He agreed, "Yes, he's not, I think, in solitary. What must it be like to be in the unit in weather like this that makes everything psychotic?" Ruth shrugged in awful irony. At least his cousin's there too. They would have missed each other over Christmas. Claire's mother's keys clinked round the front. Claire stood. She and Ruth went in together. George stayed, remembered being married to Heather and sitting alone drunk outside in the nasturtiums while she lived her life and did her work, accepted. Now there was the smell of lilies, noon-scorched, calla, not canna, sprung from clay, not salt. He was heartened, imagining what Claire would say if he chose for himself now any such solitary sentence. Ruth gone, Claire returned again, this time above him on the steps. She said, "Mum said good night. She's got heat exhaustion. I made her drink iced water," then showed him the glass carafe and punch cups. They drank some. "It is still so hot you have to remember to drink," she thought. The evening cooled less frantic and the Southern Cross engorged above them, its stars big as the flag once made of it for a Eureka. "It's the first time I've seen it look like the flag," she said. "It's funny. When I think of the rebellion, it's that Peter Lawler ended up so long in Parliament, I forget the 30 dead." George said it was a real ambush. The police had spies and shot the men at midnight. He heard his voice sound factual and sad, in keeping with the humid evanescence. And suddenly the guns. Three volleys of automatic shots, probably only a block or two away, and bike wheels in guttural crescendo on the crumbling swollen tar. "We're going in," said George then, scooped up the three Greek cats. George and the dog leapt up and looked in each other's eyes with resignation. The light in the lounge went on and they followed Claire inside, the dog still quivering from sleep. Claire's mother, in a blue, soft satin wrap, disentangled cats with patience. As they waited for the sirens, Claire said, "Someone didn't pay for something." George shrugged, "Well, they have now," as the wheels outside shrieked past.